afternoon to share what I think would be quite a tough journey, and that is breaking that glass ceiling of good. Yeah, get it to outstanding. I am not saying moving from special measures isn't hard. I'm not saying that moving from requires improvement isn't hard. Of course they are. But good to outstanding seems to be something we can almost bump our heads against many, many times. I think it's fair to say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that everybody wants their school to be at least good. Yeah? Sure?
Yeah.
Good. But like I say, I also think that sometimes crossing that bridge from good to outstanding can seem a little bit of a mystery. And you know, I've been working with schools for 6 years in this capacity, and I get so many head teachers say to me, Sonia, we're working harder, smarter, faster, the team are putting their all in. Yeah, I know we're not outstanding. We're not there yet. And it's not just about the data. It's more than that. And they can't quite figure out what it is. I think slightly more worryingly is recently quite a few heads have said to me, we've been inspected, and in that inspection, a section like behaviour was really good. Like, it was glowing. They were talking about how wonderful our children are, but it was good. So they asked the inspectors, what do we need to do to make it outstanding? And disappointingly, they haven't been able to say. So I thought it would be useful to talk about this barrier. That's all the anecdotal stuff. I was curious, what can we actually find out in terms of data? So you might think I don't have a life, but I analysed the 2015-16, the last 4 years, inspection reports. There are over 1,000 of them. Because what I wanted to see was what happened to those schools who'd previously achieved good. Now, the great news in 2015-16 is a lot of schools that were RI were inspected. No surprises there. But so many of them, a huge chunk of them, moved up to good. And that's brilliant news. What about those schools who were good in their last inspection, and in 2015-16, they're inspected again? Well, what we see is 70% either remain the same or get worse. And I was really surprised by that, but I was even more surprised when I realised that the chunk that get worse was bigger. Now, it's not that it's impossible, because 30% got better. But what is it that makes it so difficult? And does that sound familiar to you? You know, are you sitting there thinking, no, I know exactly what I need to do to get from good to outstanding? Or are you thinking, actually, it can just seem to be a bit of a... I think it's almost like a mystery. Give me some feedback here. Nod, shakes. Yeah, okay, so, good. We're in agreement. I think there's some stuff you know. It's stuff we talk about all the time. It's in the pages of the handbook that I know some of the speakers referred to. Progress, attainment, how certain groups are doing, how good are your governors when it comes to leadership? And then I have to admit, far too often on a good report, I see that spelling or handwriting seem to be the key. I would love to believe if you improve spelling or handwriting, you become outstanding. Sadly, I don't think that's the case. I've walked into a lot of schools and I often talk to them about how I can be met by certain barriers. Because I think there are a few barriers that are less obvious. There's a mindset barrier, an emotional barrier, and a time barrier. And I think there are some practical things you can do, some actually quite straightforward things you can do to overcome each of these three. So some of you might have noticed that, you know, here or on other days, I might talk about outstanding with inverted speech marks, or being great, or being better than good, or educational excellence. And I've certainly heard, you know, some of the speakers today talk about taking their schools, you know, to great. But actually, we're not going to call it outstanding anymore. And this is this first barrier, the mindset barrier. Because outstanding's a bit of an allergic word. People break out in all sorts of kind of twitches and rashes when they hear it. In fact, there are three particular itches and twitches and rashes that I notice. The first is, I don't want to be outstanding if it means I need to hothouse my children, I need to only teach that subject, I've got to be horrible to my staff, I've got to be a hero head. Yeah, any of these things. And I think what we're really saying is, I think that's what I'm meant to do if I want to be outstanding, and fair enough, you don't want to do it. I get that, and I agree. The second one is, it's not possible to be outstanding, because the criteria keeps changing, because we're RI, because we haven't got enough money, because it's harder in our context. We've got high mobility or EAL, or they come in really low. And the third is the careful what you wish for, which is, you know what, once we get to outstanding, we need to stay there. We've got to maintain it, because there's only one way to go, isn't there? And I think this is the challenge of the word, the mindset barrier, because it creates a lot of these thoughts in people. And you know, when I say people, I mean, you know, it could be anyone in education. Yeah, I'm not just talking about head teachers and leaders, you may or may not have it, people in your team. Now, as you probably realise, at Heads Up, we specialise in helping schools move to outstanding. Here, training in schools, various things we do. If I'm really honest with you, I don't want you to be outstanding. I don't. I want you to be more. Because this is a man-made construct, isn't it? It's a criteria. And do you know what? You know, love or hate Ofsted, isn't it great that we care enough about education to measure it? What's outstanding education today to what it was for the Victorians, to what it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago? What was outstanding when you were at school? To what it'll be in 10, 20 years' time? It will keep changing. Because it's a man-made measure. And incidentally, I do think it gets harder because you keep doing a better job. Yeah, the victims of your own success. But it is just a marker, a milestone. So whatever you want it to be, I've heard the heads this morning in this room talk about outstanding in so many different ways. Be a fantastic school, a phenomenal school, an awesome school, a distinguished school, whatever you want it to be. Make it your own. But outstanding is just a marker on the way there. It's certainly not the destination. That said, I think it's all right to talk about getting outstanding. Because actually, if you're providing that high level of education, why shouldn't you get the badge of honour? And outstanding heads in the room, please let me know if this is right or wrong. But certain problems do go away when you've got that badge. I'm guessing you've got a pretty easy full role. They're knocking at the doors. Recruitment can get a lot easier. Even resources can flow to you.
Yeah.
See Anne nodding there. Yeah, and be recognised for it. But it's not the destination, it's just a milestone en route. The second barrier is the emotional barrier. A few years back, Sir Michael Wilshaw delivered what I think was an absolute stroke of genius. He changed the category satisfactory to requires improvement. And I don't know whether he knew the psychology behind that. But as humans, we are less inclined to move towards pleasure. We will actively work to move towards pain, away from pain. Yeah, anything we perceive as uncomfortable, we want to get away from. But then to move towards the nicer things, we can choose whether we want to or not. Now, satisfactory was all right, wasn't it? Because we were satisfactory. By making it requires improvement, it became painful. And I do think whether, you know, some of you have been in special measure schools, RI schools, to be honest, as a matter of professional pride, that's uncomfortable. In fact, I was talking to somebody at lunchtime who was telling me how they recently got inspected and they did get good having been in special measures. And the inspector came in kind of going, well, if you get RI, that'll be good. She was going, no, it will not be good enough. My children deserve better than that. Now, I think you'd all feel like that, whether you've been in that position or not. And it doesn't matter whether you've got your local authority or your HMIs coming in to monitor you. You would work hard because requires improvement fundamentally does not allow us to be proud and give our children what we want. But here's the problem. There's no pain in good for most people. And that's good because good education is good. I'm not saying there should be pain in there. And I'm certainly not saying we should change the name. But in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, he talks about how good is the enemy of great. I also like this quote from Denzel Washington, who says, ease is a greater threat to progress than hardship. And this is the emotional barrier, because when we get to good, we can find that we can have really nice, intelligent discussions about whether there should be an outstanding category. Should it contain this or should it contain that? And it becomes very kind of intellectual. in a way that actually, you know, requires improvement is almost, you know, it just gives energy and drive to move forwards. And I think this can be the challenge when we're at good, because it's almost an option to get better. And I've seen this in loads of schools where a new head's gone in and they've gone round and they've kind of realised that the school isn't good, it's actually all right, and the inspectors came in, that's what they get. But the team think they're good or better. And it can be really hard to create the change because they don't really see why they need to change, certainly not all of them. It's not until the inspectors come in and say they're all right that they might actually then be able to make the changes. And so what I'd think about with this issue is, what is your team's willingness to change? You know, is good enough at this point? Because that can really stop getting the actions you need and the changes you need to make that qualitative shift. Let's look at the third one, the time barrier. So I know it'll be different for all of you, but on average, and I've looked at a lot of Ofsted reports, on average, the inspectors come around every 3 years. And generally speaking, you tend to go through three phases during this time. So the first is, you bask in your glory. And so you should. If you've got a good or better inspection result, then absolutely enjoy celebrating your success. Enjoy just breathing for a little while, because the pressure, you know, it's hard going. And some of you have been waiting for more than 3 years and been trying to keep up this level for a long time. This period lasts until your next holiday, typically. Yeah, end of term, half term. Because then we get about a good 2 years where we can really try to improve. Because after that, guess what? We know they're on the horizon and they could be coming back and knocking on our door any moment. So we start to really think about and focus on our next inspection. And it's in phase two that we miss an opportunity. Because you've got a really nice chunk of time that you can do some really deep changes. You could literally break bits apart in your school and put them back together in what you hope will be a better way, but might not. You can experiment. You can play with things. But sadly, quite often we miss this opportunity. I'm not saying there's not work going on. There's tons of hard work. I've not found a school that isn't working hard, and I still struggle with a phase coasting school because it just doesn't exist in practical terms. But what's missed here is that chance to make those deep changes. And sometimes that's because we're not sure what deep changes we need to make. And by the time we realise, we're kind of too far in to actually risk making those changes. And so we don't get to significantly move the quality of our education on in that gap between inspections. Ofsted provide a real focus. In fact, I've had quite a few teachers say to me about year to 18 months after their inspections, do you know what? We seem to have lost the focus, the energy that we had before the inspectors came. And everyone's still working hard, but we just don't seem to be getting to where we need to be. So it's because Ofsted provide a marker that we have to work towards. It's a bit like the idea, I don't know if you heard this phrase, I really like it. The week before your holiday is the most productive. The week after your holiday is your least. And Ofsted almost provide, not a holiday, admittedly, far from it, but almost that focus point. We don't always manage to get back up to where we need to be. So how can we overcome these barriers? Oops. Said, reduce the mindset barrier, that allergic word of outstanding. Call it something else. Doesn't mean you don't want your badge. But I've heard the speakers this morning, I see Trudy smiling at me. You know, talk about what you really want to create. Change the word, change the phrase. Reduce the time barrier, set a goal. Actually, we're really as good as we think we are. We're going to achieve it by then. You might talk about it in terms of a date, you might talk about it in terms of inspection cycles. But really know what you want to work in that 2 years, where unless something goes horrifically wrong and Ofsted come in, you've got 2 years to really, really drive some things forward, deep things. And how do we reduce this emotional barrier, the idea that, you know, once we're good, we don't have as much energy to move towards great as we do when we're moving from requires improvement? I think there are a couple of things you can do here. One is you can make an aspect of work really great. Yeah, that might be, I mean, Anne mentioned this morning, Anne Powell, you know, getting your office team working really well or making a certain year group look really great, yeah? Because what you want to do is you want to show good, but you want to show what looks better than good, to create this like tension, so good no longer looks good enough. The other way you can do this is change something in your environment. Yeah, make a part of your school look great. Yeah. Because again, it shows that it puts that tension in. It's a bit like, have you ever decorated a room in your house and then suddenly the rest of your house doesn't look as nice as it did and you've got to do the next bit and the next bit, but until you decorated that room, it was good. In fact, it was great as far as we were concerned. By redecorating, we highlighted it wasn't as good as it could be. That same kind of idea. They are, I think, three relatively small changes. I'm not saying they don't take work, but in terms of getting past these more invisible barriers on the way to outstanding, there are three, and how you can move past them. So, if it's right with you, I'd like to go on and talk about the one bigger change, I believe, that really moved a school from good to outstanding. And I know a lot of you in here, if you haven't already, you've got my book, but quite a few have come across my book, and you know that I'm a big believer in culture and how that changes. And every year, when I hear these head teachers speak, it's evident that you know, they've really worked on their culture. Some of you were here last year and you would have heard me talk about how I can accurately judge a school to an alarming degree of accuracy within 30 seconds. That's because culture seeps through the walls. In fact, Anne, you quoted your Ofsted report earlier.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, and she said, you know, the ambitious culture of the school, I'm paraphrasing, but it seeps through the walls. They could just feel it. For want of a better phrase, you know, literally the school stinks of your culture. Everywhere you go. And for me, I believe that culture really is the big change for becoming outstanding, and this is why we can keep hitting our head against this glass ceiling of good. And some of you have heard me talk about culture before, yeah? So you'll know the three principles. Should we have a test? No, I'm joking. but I'd like to talk about it again today, and the reason I'd like to talk about it, for those of you who haven't heard about developing culture, to talk about it with you, but also because I think it can be really easy to underestimate creating culture. There's so much consistency and tenacity, I'm thinking of, again, Anne's talk this morning, required that we can almost forget about it, because it can drop off, we cannot realise how inadvertently we're creating not a high-performing culture. So I'd like to cover it, because the business of schools is learning, right? That's what we're in for, yeah? It's learning. If you want exceptional learning, you need to have exceptional teaching, yeah? We sure?
Yes.
Good, that's good. If you want exceptional teaching, you have to have exceptional leadership. Yeah? How do we enable these teachers to be brilliant if we're not doing that at leadership level? I would say the core job of leadership is to create the highest performing culture you can. Now, there's leadership and there's management. I'm not talking about the management part, I'm talking about the leadership part. And I know in your roles and how full they are, you do have to do both. But the core job of leadership is high-performing culture. Do you remember Vic Goddard, who's the principal of Educating Essex, Passmore's Academy? He's not the principal of Educating Essex, he's the principal of Passmore's Academy that was featured on Educating Essex. And he talks about when he walked into his office, on the first day, there was a post-it note from the previous head. And it said, remember, Vic, you set the weather. No one has a greater influence on culture than the leader. And I'm not saying that to burden you. That's not my intention. But actually, you are crucial, leaders and your leadership teams, in creating that culture. The thing is, it's not. There's not one model. Creating culture is a set of principles. And when you apply it, in your own way, that's right for you and your school and your community, it looks different every time. All these outstanding head schools, they all look different. They do things differently, but at their core, they've created incredible cultures. I think something that can really help us understand if we are truly creating a culture that's high performing is to use an analogy. And I think of creating culture as being a bit like creating a garden. Okay, so when you get your schools, there are certain things that are given, right? You've got a certain size building in a certain location with X amount of land, with certain teachers and members of staff, with a certain number of forms entry. There are just some things that are given. And it's the same if I gave you a plot of land for a garden. Yeah, it's a plot of land, it gets X amount of sunlight, it's got a lawn in it, it's got a tree in it, whatever it's got. Our job in the first instance, when we're really looking at culture, is to look at what we've got, whatever it is, a school with a really bad reputation, a school where expectations aren't necessarily high enough, and to be able to work out how awesome, great, brilliant we can make that, and why we want to do it. Because you need to have a vision. And if you can't see it, the chances are no one else is going to. And if they can, they're not in the position of power, for want of a better word, to make it happen. So you've got to have that really, really strong vision of what does, whatever word you use, outstanding, great, brilliant, what does it look like? Because then you've got to share it with your team. And you've got to excite them so that they want to come with you on that. Yeah? Now, what it looks like is different for all of you. The same that if I gave you a plot of land and said, make me the best, like Chelsea Flower Show award-winning garden that you can, you'd all come up with something different. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It could be a rose garden, a water garden, a fruit garden, a veg garden. You'd all have your own ones. There would be 60, 70-odd different versions of that, and that's fine. But it needs to be at that award-winning level. You have to keep talking about it. So I'm going to keep pointing to talks this morning because it just resonated. And you said you just kept talking about your vision over and over and over. And a bit like if you were planting up a garden, you need to kind of step back and go, is it working out right? Is it turning into what we wanted it to? Nicola's going to speak to you this afternoon. But Surrey Square was outstanding about eight years ago?
Yeah.
And then, as luck would have it, the two joint heads were both off at the same time on maternity leave. They came back, Ofsted came, and their school was judged as good. And then Liz and Nicola kind of stepped back and went, right, hang on a minute. We didn't set out to make a school that was only outstanding when we were here. This wasn't our vision. So how do we create that and changed it? You've got to keep talking about it to keep it on track. That's the first key principle. The second is, and some of you will know a lot about this, having those difficult conversations successfully. Yeah? Perhaps a teacher's in a role and they're not performing well enough. Perhaps someone's in a role but they'd be better off elsewhere. Perhaps actually for some people, in the worst case scenario, maybe this just isn't the right school for them. And again, I like the analogy of a garden here, because if you want to have a prize-winning garden, you can't have a weed on your perfect lawn. No one's going to give you an award for that. You can't have plants that aren't growing as well as they could, or not even working in a particular area in a garden. You need to maybe move them somewhere else or do something with them. For me, when I think about a team as a garden, and what are all these plants and flowers and trees doing in it, are they fulfilling the role they need to make it spectacular? It kind of takes away the noise around, do I need to be having that conversation or not? Because you can't have a high-performing team unless everyone is really working fantastically and doing the role they need to. And if they're not, that's where we need to have difficult conversations. I'm not saying, you know, if someone's having a hard time at home and their performance isn't as good, we jump on them straight away. Obviously, we're humans. There's an ebb and flow to that. But the core job that we really want to get down to is growing the skills of our team. A gardener's job is to grow. Yeah, to grow their flowers, their fruit, they should be as fantastic as possible. And that's one of the core principles of creating a brilliant culture. It's all about, do you enable your team to be exceptional? Now, the thing is, to get to good, often what we can do is we can do kind of whole training. Yeah, so we can do kind of just, you know, we're all going to be trained on this, we're all going to be trained on that. When we're looking at good to outstanding, actually, training needs to become more individualised. Yeah? Because they're all at a good level. So how do we get them all to be brilliant? We've got to start getting more specific. That can take more work, but it's the right kind of work to really raise individual performance. These three principles need to keep being used over time. Again, I'm going to go back to the garden analogy. Beautiful, stunning gardens normally take a while to establish. Yeah, we need to keep watering them. We need to keep giving them plant food, we need to tend to the individual needs. Maybe some plants need splints to grow taller. But it takes time. And it's the same with this. And it's that crucial role of leadership to keep really developing, really crafting that culture, taking it from good to great. And even when you're there, there's still more you can do. I do really believe that the glass ceiling of good can be broken in every school. And I believe that because I've seen it done in every context. It doesn't matter what type of school, academy, free school, anything. Amanda Jennings' school's outstanding and their year sixes have 50% mobility. Schools with high EAL. Every variation you can think of, it's out there, and yet they've broken that glass ceiling of good. Yes, it does take bravery, I think, and I think it absolutely takes skill on a number of levels. And of course, it's going to take hard work, but I think you're all working pretty hard already. Yeah? No? I reckon you are. It's hard not to as a head teacher. But it's there. That glass ceiling is there to be shattered, but it's these deeper changes that make that shift. My hope is that if 70% of you in this room are in good schools, my hope is that all of you are able, in the not too distant future, to shatter that glass ceiling. Thank you.